On this episode of Skeptico, Alex talks with Pastor Howard Storm about his conversion to Christianity by way of near-death experience.
Your experience is just so specifically Christian in a way that I got to tell you, I cannot tell you one near-death experience researcher that I've encountered that would be on board with your interpretation of this experience in terms of it being singularly a Christian kind of thing. How do you square with that?
I certainly believe that all near-death experiences are idiosyncratic. I believe that these experiences are gifts, and everybody is given a different gift. Just as everybody is different in this world, they're all going to have somewhat different experiences.
Stay with us for Skeptico.
Welcome to Skeptico, where we explore controversial science with leading researchers, thinkers, and their critics. I'm your host, Alex Sakaris, and on this episode of Skeptico, we're going to look at the link between Christianity and near-death experience. This is a show, an interview that I was really looking forward to because the Christian near-death experience thing has kind of been in the media quite a bit lately. A major movie came out. Pastor Howard Storm, who you're going to hear from today, has been out for quite some time. There's actually another gentleman out there, Ian McCormick, who I'm going to interview today. I mean, with this time-shifted interview schedule, you won't hear it for a few weeks. But this is a topic I really wanted to dive into because, as you probably know, there's this divide between near-death experience researchers who say, yes, this phenomena is real. It seems to be connected with this spiritual transformation that people go through. But no, researchers say, there doesn't seem to be any link between this and any specific religious experience. As a matter of fact, every near-death experience researcher I can think of says just the opposite, that even people who go into a near-death experience with some kind of religious background, Christian background, Hindu background, are often surprised at getting back the message that it's not about their particular religion. But then you have folks like Howard Storm, who you're going to hear from today, who have a very distinctly Christian kind of experience. So I really wanted to sort all that out, and that's what I tried to do, or at least start to do, with this interview. The story of Howard Storm is well known to many familiar with the near-death experience phenomena. Pastor Storm was a committed atheist until a severe illness left him in a hospital bed in Paris, France, on the brink of death. What happened next was a dramatic near-death experience that brought him to the depths of, I guess, what most of us would call hell, and finally to a dramatic encounter with a spirit being he understood to be Jesus. All of this is chronicled in his book, My Descent into Death. Howard, welcome to Skeptico. Thanks so much for joining me.
Well, thank you, Alex, for having me on your program.
My pleasure. Your story is amazing. I've given folks just a brief thumbnail sketch there. Do you want to quickly fill in some of the details, the most important details that people need to know about this incredible experience of yours? As we were chatting about just before, you're 38 years old, you're a teacher at a university and an atheist, and then this thing happens.
Yes, I sincerely believe that I was as unpredisposed to have an experience of ultimately of Jesus, God, total conversion of my whole way of thinking as anyone could be. I was very committed to an atheist point of view, and I do not mean agnostic. People sloppily confuse those two terms, and I was quite committed to the notion that there was no God. I didn't have any doubt in my mind that that was true. And because I was a university professor and hung out with other professors with the same worldview, we all shared and supported one another in those views, and there wasn't anything in our world or in our culture that was contradicting it. in our society and in American culture at this time, you can be quite comfortable being an atheist. And I think that the popular culture supports that point of view. So when this happened to me, it was all new and shocking and amazing. And
transformative, too. I mean, I think that's one of the things that you can look at from the near-death experience that is truly difficult for anyone to explain, and that's your life. I mean, your life was completely transformed and has been. Tell us about what you do now and how it changed after this experience.
Well, after the experience, I knew that I had to remake everything, and that's a very difficult process because I had spent 38 years developing my life, my persona, my everything. And I'd worked hard. I worked my way through school to undergraduate, graduate school to get a terminal degree in art so that I could become an art professor, and had worked my way through academia to being a tenured professor and a department head. And to undo all that, because when I say I have to undo all that, I had to undo all the assumptions that underlied all that about what life was about, what I was doing in this world, and how I was treating myself, other people, and most especially the great, wonderful mystery that we refer to as the Creator God, the Maker, the Supreme Being, the Other, the Holy, the One. And as a consequence, I became very involved with the church and felt that I was called into the ministry of the church. So after my experience, I went back to the university, and after a few years, I left the university and went to seminary so that I could be trained and qualified for the ministry, which I went to Methodist seminary for 3.5 years and graduated and was ordained and served churches as a full-time pastor for 22 years.
Amazing. So let me take a different angle on this, Howard. The near-death experience is something we've looked at a lot on this show. We usually try and stick pretty close to the science of it because at this point, as I'm sure you're aware, there's a large body of peer-reviewed scientific literature on this. We've had a lot of those people on this show. Dr. Jeff Long, somebody I know you're familiar with. I'm really impressed with his work. Pin Von Lommel, another really impressive guy from the medical community, 20 years cardiologist. A bunch of other folks, Suzanne Gordon, Jan Holden. The list goes on and on of people who are serious academics who've published scientific literature, peer-reviewed stuff on near-death experience. What do you make? I've never really seen much of your view or opinion on this body of scientific work dealing with near-death experience. What do you make of that?
I'm aware of some of it, and I appreciate the fact that people are trying to study this objectively, but there's a huge limitation because the actual experience can't be observed by any other person. So the only thing that is observable, the only thing that's measurable is the after effects. And the interesting thing about the near-death experience that you've already mentioned is that near-death experiences are transformative as opposed to drug trips or, people, there's a bunch of quacks out there, quack scientists who say, oh, we can reproduce near-death experiences with drugs and stuff like that. And it's not true. And one of the measures of that is there isn't any real measurable difference in terms of transforming the people. People that I know that have had near-death experiences, lives are radically changed. And when I say radical, the Latin root means to go to the very root. I mean, the very core of their being is changed. And that is measurable, not only in what they do with their lives after the experience, but also attitudes like, for example, measuring anxiety about death. People who have near-death experiences tend to register no fear or anxiety about death whatsoever, as opposed to the general population where it's death, of course, is the number one fear and anxiety about life. So it's hard stuff to scientifically measure, but there's this huge body of evidence, and by what I'm referring to is millions of lives not hundreds, not thousands, millions of lives in the United States alone and all over the world of people whose lives are changed by these experiences. So there has to be something going on. And it's not reproducible in any way by the scientific community. They can try electric shock and taking people with anesthetics or other chemicals to the edge of death. They can administer hallucinogens and things like that, and none of that produces the same result.
Yeah, but I think, don't we have to be kind of careful when we start saying that, or when we start saying that we can't approach it this way or that way? I think there's some very interesting work that has been done about both understanding both the medical conditions, preconditions that are associated with the reported experience. So let's break that down. So as you say, we cannot re-experience what you experienced.
No.
But of course, science does this all the time. There's a variety of different ways that we can collect and look at those experiences and try and find patterns in them, try and find predictable preconditions that would suggest what those experiences are really about. We can look at them cross-culturally. We can see if the experiences in the United States are any different than the experiences in India or Japan. And, you know, one of the guests I had on this show that I thought was really interesting, because she took an ethnographic perspective on near-death experiences, was Dr. Suzanne Gordon. And, you know, this whole idea of ethnography is well established in the sciences, that we can look at different cultures, we can look at different people who have different experiences, and we have this body of tools that we can use to break that down. So I'm not so sure that I would say we can't penetrate this. And I guess where I'm really going with this is that when we start doing that, you know, Jeff Long has looked at thousands of these cases, Dr. Jeff Long, with a very rigorous 150 question, at least the last time I checked, it was a 150 question survey where he asks all these questions about people's near-death experience and compares and contrasts those. How do you think your experience would fit in with the broader body of this? And more importantly, do you care how it fits in or what any of these researchers might have to say about your experience?
Okay. Well, first of all, since I am a human being and try to have some insight into my nature, I want to be validated just like anybody else, you know, and it's pretty painful when people tell me I'm crazy or I hallucinated or I'm fabricating all this or I'm, you know, doing this for profit or whatever. So, you know, that's hurtful. The research, some of it is really validating and some of it, of course, is demeaning. Like, for example, when I read research where someone says near-death experiences are the same things as epileptic fits, because people that have epileptic fits see bright, brilliant white light in their head, so that must be a near-death experience. And, you know, they don't know what they're talking about, because the part that's so important about the near-death experience, that everyone that I've ever met that's had a positive near-death experience, and we do know that there's a substantial portion of people have negative ones. Everyone that's had a positive one, the key word is love. And I've talked to many of these people, and we are all in complete agreement that there is no equivalent to what we experienced in this world, that the sense of love is so overwhelming, so all-encompassing, so completely affirming, that that's the essence of the life-changing, transformative experience in that love. And I went to seminary and I studied theology, and I don't have any words to even begin to encapsulate what that really means. It's tough stuff.
No, fair enough. And I guess where I'm coming at this from is I'm always a little bit leery, to be honest with you, the folks that rely too much on their experience. I mean, this is the same thing, Howard, that atheists will tell you, or people of different religious stripes or different spiritual stripes. Hey, I have a guy who came on the show, and I consider him a friend, good guy, Graham Nichols. He has out-of-body experiences.
which is one part of the near-death experience that you had. You were out of your body. Well, he practiced this for a long time and was able to achieve out-of-body experience. And I've had other people on that report similarly. They say there's a no-God kind of experience, right? So they're out of their body. They're open to experiencing any kind of religious things. But they say, hey, it's not out there. Or you'll have an atheist who'll say, it's Suzanne Gordon again, who studied these near-death experiences. One of the people she studied in depth, hundreds of hours of interviews, was an atheist, had a near-death experience, came back from the near-death experience, and wasn't completely transformed in terms of a religious experience, did acknowledge that, hey, well, there is something more. I did learn that. But no, I'm not ready to say that, you know, I'm down with the whole God and Jesus thing. Yeah. So yeah. There's a variety of different experiences out there. Don't we have to account for those if we're going to take a more scientific view of these? Or your experience is just so specifically Christian in a way that I got to tell you, I cannot tell you one near-death experience researcher that I've encountered that would be on board with your interpretation of this experience in terms of it being singularly a Christian kind of thing. How do you square with that?
I certainly believe that all near-death experiences are idiosyncratic and that people are, I believe that these experiences are gifts and everybody is given a different gift. Just as everybody is different in this world, they're all going to have somewhat different experiences. Raymond Moody, who came up with the first study of this and said, and he found 10 similarities in what he called core experiences. And that was pretty good stuff because people that had had core experiences were out there before Raymond Moody wondering if they were crazy. And when I read Moody's stuff and went through the checklist of like, yeah, I've had these things, then I am like other near-death experiences, but it doesn't mean that any of us have similar experiences. My experience, why was it so Christian? I can only speculate because I quit church when I was 14, 15 years old. I didn't have any theological background. The things that I learned in my near-death experience were not recollections of things that I had learned as a child in Sunday school. I had never read the Bible in my adult life, ever, and I didn't read any theology. So I was given a lot of information that was not implanted in me in my youth. I believe that what I was given was a gift, and I think part of the reason why I was given this gift was in order to assert the truth, the validity of the Christian tradition. And it's been an interesting journey because I've pursued trying to integrate what I learned in my near-death experience with my own readings. I went to a seminary, took surprisingly rigorous academic classes, graduate classes in theology, and then as a pastor had to try and transmit this information over time to people. And I have wanted to express myself because I found that that's where what I learned and what Christian orthodoxy teaches, where they come together and support one another. After my near-death experience, I thought, well, since Christianity is so corrupted by people, and I don't want to go into a big critique of the church, but we all know the church has some problems, some serious problems. I thought about the idea of starting a new religion, and we could call it Howardism or whatever. You know, I'll start my own church. And I very quickly realized what an absolutely pathetic idea that was, because that was, it smacked of narcissism. It smacked of going off in some kind of esoteric place, setting myself up as a guru. And I didn't want to do that. I want to be part of, there's supposedly 2 billion Christians in the world. I wanted to be part of that body of knowledge, which is an interesting body of knowledge because this is a body of knowledge that's been trying to work itself out for 5,000 years. And you can't think of many other examples of, you know, body of knowledge trying to refine itself over 5,000 years of human history. There are some other examples, but you know, this is a really major one. And I wanted to express myself, articulate what I understood in that. And when the more I understood Christianity, the more I realized that it was absolutely consistent with what I'd experienced. So it's not. So what I have done is I have merged myself with this huge ancient tradition and body of knowledge with two billion other people on this planet.
Yeah, but a lot of those 2 billion people don't exactly agree with you. As a matter of fact, if you go onto Amazon and look at your book, the most vocal critics, and on the internet in general, the most vocal critics of your book are Christians who will cite you passage after passage of where your views conflict with Christian doctrine. And I don't want to get too far into that because I don't put a lot of stake in Christian doctrine. But at the same time, I guess I'd say, you know, where does your Christian interpretation of the near-death experience fit in with this broader body of near-death experience literature and really transformative spiritual experiences? Because, you know, one of the people that I appreciated that came on the show is Dr. Evan Alexander, best-selling book, Harvard neurosurgeon, has this near-death experience. Emphatic about two things. One, that it's not religious. There is no religious connection to the transformative spiritual experience. This is his interpretation, not mine. All religions are a mere pathway or reflection of this God consciousness that is out there, the light that everyone talks about. And that is repeated over and over again by every near-death experiencer you'll hear. It's not about religion. There's no right religion. It's just there's these cultural differences that people get interpreted down. And the second thing that he's emphatic about is that we shouldn't just be looking at near-death experiences as the only way that this God consciousness gets transmitted, that there's a broader body of transformative spiritual experiences. People have kundalini experiences. People have just spontaneous prayer experiences, or they're doing the rosary or something like that. So 2 points then. Don't we have to look at this in terms of a broader transformative spiritual experience? And don't we have to pull religion out of this? Doesn't it just really kind of muck it up? Because as soon as you put it in there like that, then you're sounding like a lot of other people that are very dogmatic about their perspective, about their connection with the higher source, and it's the my way or the highway kind of thing.
I agree with almost everything you said, that it's not about religion, and that absolutely near-death experiences are only a subcategory of what I would refer to as mystical experiences, or transformative experiences, whatever you want to call it. So there's a whole lot more to transformative experiences than the NDE. Now, back to religion, for example, the one thing that I took exception to is that all religions are not the same, and all religions are not equally good. And there are religions that teach hate and destruction, and there are religions that promote love. And there are tremendous abuses of religions within religions. So Christianity, which is the majority religion on this planet, with 2 billion adherents, has sociopaths and narcissists and every kind of human disorder, personality disorder that's imaginable in it. And some of those people are very vocal. But the teaching of the essential Christianity, and I'm not trying to bring this up, is, in my opinion, absolutely consistent with the love ethic and cosmology of the near-death experience.
I wouldn't argue with you. So let's say that it is. But I think that the problem comes in that we bring along with that the baggage of, the main baggage is just the primacy, you know? Christianity is it, baby. It is the way to go. It is the only way to go. That is consistently what we hear in the United States, in the West, from the Christian group. Yeah. And I don't think you'd back away from that either. I mean, I've watched some of your things, and it's like, through Jesus, only through Jesus, only through Jesus.
hey, that's not what this broader near-death experience says. It's not saying consistently. And that's when I think we have to do rely on science. And we say, okay, what percentage of people say that that's it? What percentage of people don't? And then we can measure it in a bunch of different ways. We can say, are they transformed? Are they living the right life? And we would have to conclude. And again, you know, we were at the beginning of this, Howard, you and I were just chatting about the absurdity of atheism. And how it doesn't make any sense, and yet it's jammed down our throat, and it's almost like it's programmed in. And you mentioned being in academia and having it, everyone's just kind of in the club and going, oh yeah, that's the way it is. We're all meaningless robots. We don't have any, our love for life, our love for our family, all that's just an illusion. Of course, I'm a biological robot, aren't you? And everyone nods and goes, yeah, I am too. It's absurd. No. Well, I got to tell you from my perspective, it's equally absurd to say that all these people that I see who are spiritually developed, who have these wonderful gifts that they bring of love and insights, are somehow in some way lesser because they don't have a Christian orientation or that they don't believe that that's necessary. I think that's a fundamental problem with Christianity that is very hard for people who are not Christian but are still spiritually inclined to get past, is this primacy of Christianity that, you know, you'll talk really nice, but at the end of the day, baby, it better come through Jesus or it's not real.
Right. Well, let me, I got a couple of responses. One is, I found the perfect response to all this from Mother Teresa. She was asked by reporters in India what she thought of all the religions in India. And she said, and this is a quote from Mother Teresa, "I love all religions, but I love my own the best." And I have used that many, many, many times. I have also tried to practice it so that, for example, a couple of years ago, I was in China with a absolutely lovely, clearly spiritually developed woman who said, "I'm a Buddhist. I'm not a Christian. I'm not interested in Christianity." And I said to her, "You're doing just fine, and I'm not here to change you." You know, I have found comfort and guidance and truth. I've found everything I've been looking for in Christianity, and I want to share that with people. And I have read Hinduism, Buddhism, you know, Baha'i faith. I've looked at other religions, and I find some good or a lot of good in many and in all of them. And to me, there's two kinds of people in the world. One is people who love religion, and the other group is people who love God. I love people who love God, and I don't care what religion they belong to. And I don't really like people who love religion. Mm.
That's an interesting, I've never heard that before. I love that. That's great. And I like the Mother Teresa quote too. And I respect that we can have preferences. It's okay to say, I love my religion best. I love how that makes me feel, how that makes me interact with the world. I'm totally in sync with those ideas.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm promoting Christianity because that's what I know and that's what works for me. And I can't really, go around and promote universal religion because there is no such thing. You know, there is, I believe that the essence of seeking God is the universal religion, but it's kind of vague. You know, I'm into the guy that says, love your enemies. That's the religion I want to promote, you know?
Right. So your work then, from the point of having this transformation, and then, as you mentioned, going through seminary, becoming a pastor, has also, again, made you somewhat of a lightning rod. I mean, you say some things that are pretty provocative to a lot of people. You said that God is disappointed in the United States or disappointed in some aspects of our culture. I mean, these are the kind of things that you understand that they one, they rile people up, and number two, they go against what a lot of other spiritual people are saying in terms of how we're supposed to understand our relationship with God. How do you feel about being this kind of a lightning rod in some ways?
I really have not aspired or made any conscious effort to be that. I am really kind of surprised when people take issue with me, because anything important that I have to say, I believe is based on my near-death experience. And I have said to people when they've taken exception, if you don't like it, why don't you go argue with Jesus? Because that's what he told me. I'm just reporting. Don't beat up the messenger. And people, of course, find that very glib and evasive, and it's not at all. Jesus told me things very clearly and straightforwardly that were very surprising and apparently upset people. Like one of the things that I get taken to task for is about life on other planets. Jesus and I talked a lot about life on other planets. Not only did he affirm it, but he showed me about life on other planets and told me the role of life on other planets and our relationship to other planets, et cetera, et cetera. We talked about ends. We had a lot of conversation about it. And there's so many people that there's no life on other planets. That's not in the Bible. Well, my counter to that is they didn't know about that then. They didn't know about telephones or TV or automobiles then either, but now we know. And, of course, science is recently, in the last few years, I'm beginning to discover that there's Earth-like planets, lots of them, actually millions of them, more than they even imagined there were in the universe. And they're being proven by science. Of course, there's life on other planets. God is a creative mad scientist making, lots of life all over the universe. One of the things that people get upset with is that I want to affirm people's love and pursuit of God in whatever culture they've grown up in. And Christians say, well, you shouldn't do that. And I say, oh, so it's better to go around and beat up people for their love of God? That's crazy. Jesus didn't do that. Jesus, when he met people from different cultures, loved them and affirmed them where they were. For example, the Syrophoenician woman, the Samaritan woman, the Roman centurion. And he certainly loved and affirmed people in his culture who were condemned to death. For example, the woman caught in adultery, the thief on the cross. I mean, Jesus loved and affirmed people where they were at and said, you got to do this, you got to believe that, or subscribe to this set of dogmas, and I might consider you. This judgmental nature of Christians and this need to make people conform to their understanding before they can accept them is contrary to the example of what I see in the Gospels.
It's interesting. It's also interesting what you say about the existence of conscious beings on other planets, because I've heard that from other near-death experiencers independently, this saying that they've brought that back. So it's interesting when we can kind of make those connections and say, wow, that matches up someone else's. Not everything matches up from everyone's near-death experience or spiritual experience. And that's, I guess, part of the challenge and the fun of why we're here trying to figure all this out. So tell me this, Pastor Storm, where do you see, I want to say, I guess, your ministry or your work with this, where is it taking you now? You've been at it for a while. Where do you go from here?
Well, honestly, I'm just totally winging it. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm about to put two books on Amazon as ebooks because I've been working on these two books for a few years and just felt that would make them the least expensive and most accessible going that route. So hopefully that's going to happen in a week or two.
Tell us a little bit about what you're putting out there on Amazon.
One is a novel that I wrote to try and illustrate how people in the struggles and difficulties of life can find solutions through the help of faith community and through the help of God, that we can overcome every difficulty. And I wrote that as a novel, and all the experiences in the book are actually based on factual experiences, mine and other people's that I've known. So it's really a book of like small miracles and big miracles, but trying to make it as compelling and realistic as possible. The other book is in my book, My Descendant to Death, I wrote, it begins with my near-death experience and then goes through some of the things that happened afterwards. And I wrote that book to as broad an audience as possible. So it's not a very Christian book. I decided that I needed to put a book out there that one gave a lot of background, personal background, and also talked about how it developed in my Christian understanding, and furthermore, how I tried to successfully and unsuccessfully to live that out in my life. So that, you know, this a lot about the hills and valleys of pastoring churches and family life and, you know, divorce and remarriage and stuff like that to a degree. So it's very personal, and I've tried to become really transparent by writing that sort of spiritual journey down. I'm working on a third book, and I want to write a book. I am writing a book about Jesus, but I don't know when I'll ever get that done, because every time I read another book about Jesus, I get more insights from other people, and I just keep growing in my understanding and appreciation for who and what Jesus is.
You know, one thing you just touched on there is this aspect of the near-death experiencer continuing life after the experience, you know, and I remember interviewing PMH Atwater, who is a near-death experience researcher, who's really looked at that quite extensively. And maybe you want to talk about a little bit about that, that just because you've had a near-death experience doesn't mean all your problems are over. Just like if you've had some kind of religious conversion, doesn't mean all your problems are over. As a matter of fact, it's with the near-death experience, it sometimes can be more upsetting because it puts you at odds with a lot of your former friends and family members, but also it just puts you at odds with your former life. So, well, what's that like?
Well, I guess there's several initial big disappointments that I had to struggle with. One is that after a near-death experience, I wrongly assumed that I was going to be a saint and that I would not have temper, anger, lust, delusions, you know, make mistakes at all, that I would somehow I had been elevated to the superior person. And to my horror, I found out that that wasn't the case at all, that I was
right,
just another human being, no better or worse than anybody else.
Just Howard still, huh? Yeah.
So that was a shocker. The other one is that when I came back, because of the physical problems that I was having, which were life-threatening and went on for a very long time, and because of losses of friends and family, there was a large part of me that said, this just isn't worth it. I'd just as soon die and go to heaven and get out of here. And it was very difficult to overcome the desire to detach myself from the world. For example, one of the solutions I found was I decided that it would be really good to become a contemplative monk. So I went to a monastery with the intention of becoming a monk. And of course, they wouldn't have anything to do with me when they found out that I was married and had children. They were like, go home, get out of here. What are you doing? And that was another big disappointment. So trying to, as a result of the near-death experience, our sensibilities, our compassion is greatly increased. And when one sees what's going on in the world, both in the micro level of our personal relationships and in the macro level of what's happening in the world, it can be quite discouraging. And that's a constant battle to not let that discouragement overwhelm you and become hopeless. I have tried to stay in the world and be an active participate in the world. And it's really discouraging that my brothers and sisters in the Christian faith, some of them want to tear me apart when I thought we were all on the same page promoting the same stuff, but apparently I'm not good enough for them.
It sounds like an important work that you're doing. I appreciate the book, My Descent into Death, and we're certainly going to look forward for these couple of new books that you're going to be putting out on Amazon. We'll keep an eye out for those. Thanks so much for joining me today. Our guest has been Pastor Howard Storm, author of My Descent into Death. Thank you, Howard.
Thank you, Alex. It was a pleasure.
Thanks again to Howard Storm for joining me today on Skeptico. I guess I'd have one question to tee up from this interview, and that is, how much do you trust your experience when it comes to spiritual matters, spiritual transformation, spiritual decisions? for me, that turns out to be a lot bigger question than it might at first seem. I mean, I think we're in a position now to be a little bit more discerning of how our experience might fit into the broader phenomena that's being reported by a bunch of other people. And I happen to think that's very important. But I want to hear your opinion, and I hope you share it with me. There are several ways to do so. They're all available through the Skeptiko website at skeptiko.com. You can bounce over to our forums, drop me an email, or leave a comment right there on the website. While you're there, of course, be sure to check out all our previous shows. You can download them from the website, or you can subscribe through iTunes or other podcast-grabbing kind of thingies. I hope you'll do that. I have a number of interesting shows coming up. They're kind of piling up, and I'm tempted to get them out more than once every 2 weeks, but we'll have to see how scheduling and everything else goes. But I have some good ones in there and some more good ones to come. Many, many interesting topics to cover. I'll never get around to covering them all, but I'm just going to continue to follow my nose and also follow your suggestions. More and more of these shows are coming from you, Skeptiko listeners, suggesting where we might go. And that's really a neat part of this process as well. So that's going to do it for this episode. Do take care, and bye for now.